There is not one mention of loneliness in the Bible. Now, solitary, okay? We just had the text about solitary, that God places the solitary in a church family, but loneliness is not mentioned in the Bible directly. Now, it's implied, and it's important. So that's why we're going to talk about it today. Now, I passed out a sheet. Did everybody get a sheet? Loneliness quiz. Now, there is one cravat to this. You have to mention a person. So you can't say Satan in 1,000 years that he's bound. Because, no, it has to be a person. Real life person. So I'm going to let you look at that while I do the introduction to the sermon, and then you're going to give me some answers here, hopefully. Now, you know, the world is a lonely place for many people, but the church is not a club. It isn't an organization, it's a family. Everybody needs a family. Whether you're young, old, single, or married, you need a family. Loneliness is the reason so many people are desperate today. Consider the many popular songs that have gone through the years. You know, now I'm dating myself from some of the songs that I'm going to mention, but there's Only the Lonely, you know. What's down at the end of Lonely Street? Heartbreak Hotel. Okay. And of course Elvis sang, "Are You Lonesome Tonight?" And Hank Williams, "I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry." You know, there's all these songs about lonesome. There's books, The Lonesome Crowd. There's The Loneliness of the Long Distance Runner. I always liked that title. I thought, never read the book, but sounds good. But the sad truth is there are just millions of lonely people in the world. 3 weeks before Christmas of 1993, in Germany, there was a man named Dietrich, Wolfgang Dierks, who died watching his television. Now, that's not too unusual, but the sad fact is that nobody knew about this for 5 years. He had an automatic payment on his rent. So his rent was always paid, his utilities were paid. And only when his money ran out and his rent wasn't paid did the landlord come in and find him dead. And the apartment, the TV lap guide in his lap was turned to December 3rd from the 5 years previously. And of course the television set had long since burned out. But, you know, it's a sad story. But we as a church are the place where God puts the lonely in a family. You are the hands and feet of Christ to deal with some of these people. And they may be closer than you think. Years ago, I taught in public school. And there were certain women in the other building. I taught in the middle school. And there are certain women in the primary school who were vicious, was the word. There was one day that they were talking and this one gentleman put a saucer of milk on the table, you know, referring to their catty remarks. They didn't get it, you know. I jumped on the principal about the fact that these women were singling out this one other teacher. And she was from the Midwest. This was Northern California. She was from the Midwest, and she talked funny. And she dressed funny, according to them. You know, she was a little more modest than they were. But it continued until Thanksgiving, at which time she committed suicide. So my initial thought was, you know, I did what I could. And then I thought, no, I didn't. I never really made friends with her. That's what it probably needed, was somebody to make friends with her. So it is something I will try never to do again. It's not to not get involved. You know, you need to be as involved as you can. But God has thousands of people that you need to deal with. And I have a cute little story here that in Japan, people are so busy that older people may now rent a family. In Japan, you can rent a family. Elderly Japanese who are isolated from their children by the frantic pace of modern life can rent a family for lunch in a few hours. Just call Nippon Koletseki of Hobu and ask for a son, daughter, grandchild, whatever relative you want, and that type will show up at your door and greet you if you have it as if they haven't seen you in years. Hello, grandfather. You know, I got a call about a week ago. I got a call from, hello, grandpa. I thought, I don't know who you are, but you're not my grandson. You know, I knew right away there's a scam that's going around. They will call you up and say that I'm in trouble. You need to send me money. Oh, no, don't, Mom. Just send me money. I thought, no, you're not getting me with that one. And besides, my son's only in academy. You know, how much trouble could he get into? You know, I mean, my son, my grandson. Now, when my son was in academy, Harold Grossbaugh called me one day and he said, I had to give Jeff a demerit. I said, what for? And he says, because he wore his hat into chapel. I said, well, I said, if he does it again, give him 3 demerits. He says, that's not the response I usually get from parents. I said, well, this isn't your ordinary parent. I said, this is a person who realizes this is a golden opportunity to deal with rebellion at an easy pace, you know, at not an exorbitant price. Deal with it. Now, the service in Japan isn't cheap. 3 hours with your family cost $1,100 plus transportation, plus a few other things. $1,100. You people are worth $1,100 an hour as family therapists, okay? So when your visitors come in, think of the value they're getting from you because you are a church family. This lady's observation of her customers is not surprising. She says, what is common about our clients is that they are thirsty for human love. And Paul mentioned in 2 Thessalonians that we were gentle among you, just like a mother with her children. Now, you can't get much more gentle than that, can you? Think of a mother in the care for her children. They don't get any softer than that. And yes, there's power in numbers. There's a lot of you here this morning. There's power in numbers. There was a story in a Reader's Digest about a hunter in Africa who was walking through the jungle and he came on a huge dead rhinoceros. And there were these pygmies standing nearby and he asked this pygmy, he said, did you kill this rhino? Yes, I did it with my club. Oh, he wanted to know more about this. Well, how big is your club? And he says, there's about 100 of us. You know, so if you have to kill a dead rhino, you know, I mean, get a rhino dead, then it takes a bunch of you. Okay. But that's the whole point of service and being together. Now, I gave you a little quiz sheet, and this leads into the main part of the sermon. Now, if you look at that quiz sheet, and I gave you some choices, and I'm just going to go down the list, and it's just for my curiosity. How many people chose number one? Say Adam was loneliest because it wasn't good for him to be alone. How many think the answer is Adam was the loneliest person in the Bible? No other people around. Didn't bite on that one. Okay, how many think David? He was the youngest male in the family, had to go out and herd the sheep, and he was all by himself. The bear came out there, lions came out, and he killed them, defending his sheep. How many think it was David? He was out there alone. Okay, how many say Jonah in the belly of the whale? Now, you can't get much lonelier than that. Let's see, three or four there. Okay. How about Esther going before the king? If he didn't like her coming before him, off with her head. How many think it was Esther? Felt alone. Okay. How about Saul? He was lonely. He was mean and rotten because he was lonely. Uriah the Hittite. He was sent out into battle, forced to basically get murdered. How about Samuel confronting King Solomon? We don't like to confront people that have superior titles, people that can punish us, or even just the boss at work. We don't really like to confront them, do we? Anybody think of Samuel? Okay. How about John the Baptist, the voice of one crying in the wilderness? He's kind of by himself. Okay. And how about Zacchaeus? Hated tax collector. Yeah, there's a vote or two for that. How many had write-in? Okay. What was your write-in?
I would say Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane.
Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, okay.
I had Jesus also, but I was thinking of the cross.
Of the cross, okay. All right. Well, if you will go to number three and start with that letter, the first letter of the name, and go down through seven and circle those first letters, there's your answer. Okay? So I could say, well, it's on the sheet. You know, you say, uh-oh. Yeah. But it's one way to hide answers in plain sight. But let's go back to Jonah for just a minute or two. Jonah was in the belly of the great fish 3 days and three nights. Now, how did Jonah have a timepiece on him? You know, clock, watch. He couldn't see the sun. How do you think he knew it was 3 days and three nights that he was in there? Okay. Did he know when he went in? Yeah, he had an idea when he went in, didn't they? Because the people in the ship threw him off and the fish swallowed him. So he knew when he went in, and when the fish spit him out on dry land, somebody could tell him what day of the week it was, right? So he had an idea how long he was there. And Jonah was to be the sign of what? Where in the Bible does it mention Jonah as a sign? The only sign that some people were going to get was what? Jonah. And Jesus was going to spend that time in the tomb. And that was the only sign that these people, these doubters and skeptics, were going to get, was Christ in the grave for those 3 days. We'll get back to the church in just a moment as well. But the main thing I want to cover is that God provides a family for the lonely. He's a father to the fatherless, a defender of widows. He's sets the family, the lonely in families. You know, you have a blessing in being in a church family. Amen. We have the same father, brothers and sisters in Christ. And, you know, think about Jesus' family. They were a little concerned about him, you know. They heard that he was in-house and he couldn't even get fed because there were so many people crowding around the house. And so they went to see about him, and somebody told Jesus that his family was outside. And he said, who's my family? Right here is my family. The people he was with were his family as well. But all through his childhood, youth, and manhood, Jesus walked alone in his purity and his faithfulness. He was different than other people. So all through his years, he was alone in many respects. He carried the awful weight of the responsibility for the salvation of men upon him. He knew when he was 12 that he had to be about his father's business. And he wasn't shy about telling people things. But he did wait until it was his time to do certain things. And when it was his time for baptism, he received baptism not as a confession of guilt on his own part, but he identified himself with us, with sinners, and took upon himself as an example to us how we should respond to his invitation. No one on earth understood him the way he would like to have had people understand him. People thought he was connected with the devil when in fact he was fighting the devil. The peacekeeper had to dwell with people that accused him of causing problems. God accepts humanity in the person of his son. That was the thing. I'm glad that, you know, two or three people got the idea ahead of time that humanity included Jesus, because Jesus was our example in all things, and it could only be our example because of his human nature. And we should want to have the response that Jesus had of, "This is my beloved son. This is my beloved daughter that I'm well proud of," you know. And that's what we need to be looking for. There was a lady named Mary, who wasn't much of a lady actually to start with, but she spent all this money on ointment and washed the feet of Jesus with her hair with it. And what did some of the people do? Oh, she spent all this money, wasted all this money, could have been spent on, you know, the poor. But Jesus understood that she was one of the very few people to recognize his needs and approving of what he did. The loneliness of Christ, separated from heavenly courts, living the life of humanity, was never understood or appreciated by the disciples as it should have been. You know, they didn't get it, did they? They didn't understand him. They didn't appreciate him as much as they should have. They didn't show him the attention that Mary had. He was well worthy of this gift. But a lot of loneliness went into Jesus' life. And then there was the anguish at Gethsemane before the cross, when he felt so alone. His face was just marred with this agony. You know, there's times that you hurt and people will say, "Oh, are you hurting?" They can see in your face, they can see in your posture that you're hurting. But, you know, Jesus, it says, was transformed more, you know, to where the disciples were just afraid to look and see him. But they went back to sleep. They didn't appreciate him at all. They were just, he was so alone. And then he prayed not just for his disciples, but for himself, that he could make this sacrifice, that he could have the strength to go through with it. He prayed that he didn't have to 3 times, but he did go through with it. And you know, I'm reminded of this story of the little boy whose parents told him that his sister needed blood. Could he give blood to his sister? Well, yeah, he could. So they set up process so his blood could go to his sister. And after his while, he asked his mother, "How long does it take for me to die?" Because he thought, blood is life, and I giving up my blood for my sister, how long does that take to die? And cute little story, but it is the blood of Christ that saves us. But he tread the winepress alone, and there was none with him. And the worst part was he had associated with his father all through those years, eons of time that they were together. Then he was born on this earth and he came to know God through his parents, through the church leaders. Came to know God and he came to trust God, came to know his mission. But when the time came, what happened? God withdrew from him. God took away all the support that he had because God could not look upon sin. The angels wanted to come down and take care of him, but no, they couldn't do that. They had to stay put. Christ had to go it alone, all by himself. And since he's done that, what we need to do is to remember that it never pays to veer from the right track, to do the right thing. We should be always willing to do the right thing. Complaints of loneliness and dissatisfaction will disappear if we do what we're supposed to do, if we are occupied with the task that God gives us. When we feel really down, if you're ever alone, then all you have to do is remember that Christ went through the extreme loneliness that you never have to. Christ died that second death so that you wouldn't have to. If at times you feel very depressed, discouraged, alone, remember that Christ has been there and done that in a far greater scale than you or I ever have to face. We don't have to be alone. Those who neglect to bear part of the responsibilities of the home and church are the ones who are troubled with loneliness and discontent, for they have not learned the truth that those who are happy because they share the daily routine of work which rests upon mother or other members of the family. Many are leaving unlearned the most useful lessons which it is essential for their future good to comprehend. I have lately been doing a temporary job. I tape cardboard boxes from 5 at night to 4 in the morning. Stand there with my tape gun and tape a box. My wrist is just a little bit overwrought right now from those taping boxes. And then the pickers, the people that fill the orders, they come and get a box and they put the things that we select, they put the things they select into the box we provided, take it to the packers and they pack it and ship it off to the store. Well, there's this one picker and he's just the laziest, most spoiled brat that you can imagine. I think that, you know, he thinks he's a Nigerian prince or something, you know, because he just does what he wants to do. The other day I said, "Hey, get back here." I said, "Take that small box out of the big box that you just put in the big box area and put it in the small box area." "How'd you know that?" I said, "I have X-ray vision. Actually, I've been watching him because I know how sneaky he is." And there was a time that I caught him just leaving boxes in the aisle. And I said, "Get back here." I said, "Your mama doesn't work here." I said, "You work here. Clean it up." You know. And his boss just got the biggest kick out of that. But we need to remember that as irresponsible and as childish as he is somebody that God died for.
Amen.
So we really need to approach anybody, even this spoiled child, with the attitude of, let's make Jesus plain to them so that they can rejoice with us someday. If not next week or next year, then in the eons to come, that we will see these people in heaven. Because we weren't perfect. We weren't born perfect. We're not perfect yet, but we have the example to be on our way. So let us remember, as we look at other people in their loneliness, that we have an answer. Christ is the answer for them.